Morning!
Morning!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal.
Hey Bunty, greetings from San Francisco and congratulations on England winning the World Cup, man. It's like a fantastic game.
Yeah, it's just literally been 10 minutes since the games got over. So we decided that rather than talk about the World Cup semi-finals and finals in installments, it would be good for us to just talk of the whole thing. So yeah, I'm actually very delighted that England has won. And the reason being, every time I am in social situations being of Indian origin, you get asked the question, you know, what is your Tebbit moment? Because over here, there was a Norman, the guy called,
Tebbit,
Norman Tebbit, whose basic funda was that if you are from a country other than England, you will support them in cricket. Therefore, by default, you're not patriotic about England, right? Mm-hmm. And like yourself, you know, you have feelings about both about India, about the United States. Like myself, I have feelings both about Britain and India. So my stock answer in those situations is that, you know, actually, it's not a contest. For me, I've got two teams in play. So unless and until they're meeting in a knockoff, right, I'm winning either way. I'm supporting two teams, right? And on the other hand, if they meet in the finals, I'm always going to be on the top because one of my teams is going to win. So I'm delighted that England has won, and particularly the way they went about winning. Okay. But should we talk about the semifinals to begin with?
Let's jump into the semifinals. I mean, and I'll give you my take on the semifinals. And I'm not really a dedicated follower of cricket throughout the year, I should say that. But of course, you know, events like this, I do get sucked in, drawn in again. I must admit that I had underrated New Zealand. I didn't know much about them. I also do feel, for instance, that, you know, they did benefit a little bit from those matches being rained out. But now having seen this match, I mean, they are a pretty good team. So I think it's, they were clearly the better team on the day. And I don't think, I mean, my read of the India semi-final against New Zealand was that New Zealand were just had a very good day, but otherwise it was not a very strong team. But I think that was my mistake, because it seems that from what I gather, listening to the commentators, etc., they've also been playing very good cricket. They have a number of quality bowlers. I mean, obviously the captain's a fantastic strategist, and I was reading that nobody reads a pitch better than him. So I think this was a good semi-final. I think it's good for the game to have more high-quality teams, more winners. I'm glad that both the dominance of India and the dominance of Australia has, been challenged.
Yeah, I think you're making a good point there, Rohit. I think let's look at the first semi-final where India got knocked out by New Zealand. I think, obviously, it was very disappointing, but one of the things we've learned, having seen the final in retrospect, that New Zealand are the bosses of kind of protecting low totals. You know, so somehow when that semi-final happened, and it was in the middle of a working day, I was kind of confident that India would be on their way to the final. And what was amazing was how they protected their small total on New Zealand's side. And how Jadeja and Dhoni kind of took it right down to the wire. Because given the appalling start we had made, three top batsmen in the hatch for three runs. We always knew Rohit Sharma was going to fail at some point. You can't be banging off centuries every match. But calamitously, what happened was three of our top batsmen, Rahul, Rohit Sharma and Captain Kohli, were back in the hatch for three runs. And cumulatively, they had contributed about 1,400 runs before that. So there was no climbing back. And the fact that Jadeja had led this kind of fight back with Dhoni was amazing. And I am very sensitive about Dhoni and people commenting about his age, etc. Because a typical bitchy Indian nakrawazi that starts when a player reaches just across the other side of 30. I just think they did it for Ganguly, they did it for Tendulkar. This is like a media obsession that once a guy is after 35, you know, when will he retire, what minute, what hour, etc. That's his business, man. And, you know, he's been a remarkable servant of the game, and we should allow him his time and space to leave. Last point about that semi-final from India's point of view, Jadeja was in a spat with Sanjay Manjrekar, who's kind of a all-time low ball in terms of, you know, how he goes about not only commentating but cricketing. I don't have respect for him as a cricketer. So some people say, but he's a very good cricketer. You know, he's a mediocre cricketer at best. And he got into a unglipanti with Jadeja, and they were very nicely Jadeja replied on field, for which I'm really grateful. And some of Sanjay Manjrekar's commentary classics we should do an episode on, because he says things like, if you don't have bowling, if you don't have batting, you have nothing. And, you know, he issues these kind of statements which are actually nonsensical, right? Because his spoken English is kind of slightly semi-competitive. He can get away with things. But anyway, that's my meander on the semi-final. Anything that you want to add on that semi-final?
Nothing much, really. I mean, I don't feel, I enjoy a great game. And today there was another remarkable game, Wimbledon, which I was, again, you know, following intermittently. I victory and loss in general and everything now mean a little less to me, which I think is, you know, just a sign of age, because, you know, there are going to be victories, there are going to be losses. So that's kind of part and parcel of the game. But I was surprised at, you know, how much the loss hurt, right? Because I still wanted us to win, of course. I thought it was a one-off that made it worse. But in retrospect, I think the New Zealand is a very, very good team at defending low totals. The rain was a bit of a bummer, but, you know, that's, again, part and parcel of the game. England got a slice of luck. I feel, for instance, that if we are going to start talking about, you know, there being a kind of divine scheme of things or a divine hand or a larger pattern, you know, as Rahul and I discussed when we did that conversation, had him as a guest, yeah. Rahul Fernandez, India is now, you know, we are the kind of bully in the cricketing, playground. And the whole schedule was designed to, you know, India's advantage. So, hey, you design a schedule to India's advantage, guess what? One day you get screwed by the rain, and that's fair enough. So that's that. But this was, you know, to me, it was a fantastic game. And I think it was played in a really, really good sporting spirit. I think, you know, everything seems to have come a long way. I mean, I don't want to romanticize, England and Lords. Lords has a nasty and racist history. We know of those incidents from, you know, Gavaskar and so on. But I think that to some extent, these institutions have kind of, after a long hiatus, not only were they racist, they were also sort of stubborn and pigheaded in defending their racism. They've kind of moved past that. So to me, you know, it was, the fact that they Stokes apologized for, the overthrows which bounced off his body, that, and then just generally looking again at the diversity of the teams. England is not perfect. We know we've had Brexit, which is a complex situation. I don't want to reduce Brexit to the UKIP and, British Nationalist Party. There are ways in which, you know, England has struggled with inclusion, and I think it's done some good things about it. Even the New Zealand team is multicultural. And to me, we keep praising ourselves as, there are three Muslims in the team, therefore everything is hunky-dory. That's not quite the case. Lots of very interesting things. I mean, I loved stuff about the final that, you know, this young man, Jofra Archer, the faith the captain had in him, the fact that he was, you know, he talked him through the final over. I mean, it was all fantastic. I think it was super.
Jofra Archer is a remarkable, sorry to jump in.
Please go ahead. I was rambling on, yeah.
But let's just, before we took the, there are two parts of the final that I want to talk about. But before we do that, Rohit, given that we've allowed ourselves some time, the semi-final where Australia got bossed out of the game by England was a remarkable feat of cricketing, right? And I think if England had fallen after that, it would have been fine, because the Ashes would have been psychologically set up for a better competition, right? And I have no regrets for Australia being defeated the way they have been.
No, me neither. But I think they should have been crashed. I'm happy.
Yeah, my only thing was I didn't want Australia to win. Only because in the last 24 months, there have been lots of things that have bubbled to the surface, which is, they were, in my mind, they were always a latent racist side, sometimes explicitly, sometimes latent. And they're also a bunch of cheats.
Right? Yeah.
And so if Australia had been in the final today and that thing that Ben Stokes accidentally did, they would have kind of made it into like a massive issue. They would have kind of, I like the way the Kiwis dealt with it, which is like, look, this guy's apologized. He didn't do it deliberately. And I'm going to let it go at that, right?
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
Australia's reaction would have been very different. They would have like let a Jamaat call, you know, third umpire four times. I just think that that's the kind of team. Right? So the fact that they got bossed out of the game, completely outplayed, taken outside and shot, as one of my friends put it, was good. Now turning our attention to the final, is a remarkable game at many levels. And if you look at the last score, the game is still technically tied in terms of runs.
Right? Now, tell me this. Explain, the super over was something new to me. I mean, you've been, you know, I'm sort of zero about IPL. I don't know about, you know, even power play, etc. These are things that I don't really have a nuanced or deep information on. So explain this to me, because I assume that there's, you know, is it the fact that en route to the finals, England had lost fewer matches? Because to me, England were all out, whereas New Zealand had lost 8 wickets. So on what basis did the match go to England, given that it was tied?
Well, it is the rules of the competition are that if your scores are tied at the end of the full 50 overs, then a super over comes into play. This is not Duckworth Lewis, where there's a loss of wicket implicates a certain amount of run change. Right?
Okay.
So how many wickets you have lost at the end of the last ball of the 49th over becomes immaterial if the scores are tied.
Okay.
You automatically cascade onto the super over.
Okay.
What
now,
I didn't know, Rohit, was that once you get into the super over, the first team who's batting, which is the team that was on the ground batting at the second innings.
In regulation time,
Is at a natural advantage in setting the score.
Okay.
Right? So what happens is when that team comes into bat and sets a score of, say, 10 or 15, as it was in this case, it is incumbent on the team that follows to beat that score. Not equal it. That I know. Therefore, in the scheme of things, the total number of wickets aside, the total number of runs scored by both teams are equal. Right?
Right. Yeah, I get it.
That's the chukki in the Super Over thing, that for some reason, New Zealand have essentially England tied the main match, New Zealand tied the Super Over.
So
right?
I wanted to know whether there was any deeper logic to it, and I don't know what the deeper logic is.
I don't either, Rohit, and I think the powers that we have to come, because what should happen, you know, like in football, if it's like after the normal penalties,
sudden death or something, right?
Sudden death means that if you're 1-1, then you keep taking kicks till one guy falls down, right?
Yeah.
So by that logic, the super over should be repeated till such time
that one team has more.
Is totally slammed. Right?
Yeah. Play another super over till you have one team that has more. That would logically seem to be something that makes more sense.
All right. Correct.
We have some intermittent disturbance, but we'll just keep going because, so hopefully we just want our listeners to bear with us. Often on there's a little bit of crackle. We'll try and, you know, process it out. Other things to me, yes, you know, coming back again, the grace that the New Zealanders showed, like, I think Williamson was asked that it was a run, and he said, no, it's not a run, because he said there were lots of occasions in the course of the match where it could have gone this way or that way, right?
So
it's all of that leading up to the final moment. So it's not just the run. The run is sort of the symbolic difference at the end. And I think that's a very interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I thought the match had, gone New Zealand's way a couple of times at least. The beginning of Jofra Archer's over, but also that...
Yeah, when he got hit for that six, I thought that now the finger of fairness will swing back in New Zealand's favour.
Yeah.
Because I thought, though Stokes was apologetic about that bat incident where the ball nudged itself to the boundary extras, overthrows, it was unlucky.
Yeah.
If it had happened to India in that situation, Bajrang Dal activists would have been burning down the British consulate.
They would have probably burned down TVs first and being daft.
Smashed it. So the more remarkable vignette of this World Cup, and again, because, you know, you are looking at this from the US, from me being in Britain, I think the vignette for this nation in terms of, you know, and I'm not saying this is perfect, race relations, etc., but the idea that a young 24-year-old Trinidadian bowler, right, who is part British, part Trinidadian, so comfortable with this dual existence, like you and me are in our lives,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
was given the responsibility and took it on, right? I'm not saying he's a poster child of, you know, kind of international harmony, but I just think that it speaks volumes from kind of the kind of slightly bigoted past that English cricketers have had, you know, and you just have to go back to Mike Gatting and Shakur Rana, that incident. Mike Gatting's only problem was that Shakur Rana was an Asian man telling him what the rules were. And he was a white man and he had to, you know. So I don't want to get too drawn into the politics, but that image, when 1966, when England won the World Cup in football, that Binion was the goal crossing the line and they think it's all over, it's over now. Right, that commentary moment. In this World Cup, the Jofra Archer last over, obviously Ben Stokes is going to be the hero of the piece, but Jofra Archer, the remarkable calm presence that he exudes was something notable. The final thing I wanted to say about this, we talked about the semi-finals, we talked about the finals and the decency of New Zealand, the competitiveness, the main characters. I want to draw your attention to the award ceremony. two comments. Why can't people, when we have any function in India, right, when there is an award ceremony, the whole Jamaat gets together with suit pieces, you know, clock radio, fucking everything is thrown at players, and the award ceremony seems never ending, right? I'm not trying to say that. So, and you always get this bunch of kind of low grade millers about, right? People who
I mean, middling level officials, there'll be some, you know, IPS officer, Nita Ambani, Ambani's wife, Ambani's aunt. You know.
Yeah, they're the person holding the lassi glass for Saab.
ZTV chief will bum himself in, even if it is, you know, the competing channel sponsoring it.
This low-grade nonsense. So, one of the things I was calling out to you on messaging was that, you know, not that we don't... This is... I don't want to be, you know, accused of being a colonial fantasist, and because this can easily be a justification of British Raj, huh? Because the way you talk about things. All I'm saying is they did a better job of organizing an award ceremony than we ever have done.
Yeah, right? No, I completely agree with you. And also, you know, that I don't know who this, first of all, Indian cricket, the administrators, where they come from, you know, what they do, what their cricketing qualifications are. I don't know who this, like, Shashank Manohar is. He was apparently...
He has no cricketing qualification. He's a low-grade political thug.
He's some, like, lawyer or something. But then Anurag Thakur is no better. He played some one fast match. He's the BCCI head now. Same thing with Jagmohan Dalmia, etc. Okay, they were hardened businessmen. And in the past, you know, in an episode, I've said that I get it. Like, once in a while, you do need also a negotiator, a hardened negotiator, even if that guy is not like a bona fide cricketer himself. But to like pack, you know, your whole cricketing administration with this. And now because, you know, all the money's in India, then these guys make this sort of transition. If there's a lot of wheeling dealing that obviously goes on to get, you know, votes and so on. So then they make the transition from the BCCI to the ICC. And there's some guy called Boria Majumdar. He's quite a clod. He's also a kind of pseudo academic. And, you know, I have had some interaction with him. Apparently he's, you know, also a kind of schmoozer. He has some connections with Saurav Ganguly. He's some kind of like minor commentator also. So, you know, these guys, you're absolutely right. I mean, there used to be this horrible guy called Rajesh Lele, who was in the BCCI. Sorry, not Rajesh Lele, Jayavant Lele. So, you know.
Okay, look, this is not about, I think what we are making is these personalities will come and go, right? What we are holding up as an issue is why do cricket administrators, right, have to be front and center of an award ceremony? Your job is administration. Your job is making the pandal and doing the Ganesh Puja. You do the pandal bazi and step aside, man. Because Ganesh Puja, the Purohit is not the guy who makes the pandal, no? So if you look at that organizer versus kind of honorary figurehead, why do these guys have... I really like the cut of Sachin. He was like, you know, calm, cool, Elvis-like presence, which I thought was really good. But this Shashank fellow, low-gradeness, I didn't find that...
I'll just share a thought on it. Well, first of all, I want to apologize. Rajesh Lele is actually a friend of mine. Sorry, just... I don't want you to be offended, Rajesh. You're a dear friend. It's Jayavant Lele, and I was actually following your Twitter feed, so slip of the tongue. But see, okay, so then, you know, again, coming back to... I like Tendulkar. He was dignified, he was quiet, and he's naturally reticent. I mean, he's, you know, I remember years ago he had come to the Rediff office. He's a very reticent kind of self-effacing guy, and he, you know, he's very shy, and I think that sort of goes with his personality, that Manohar dude didn't know what was going on. He was sort of wandering around. He was, you know, shall I wait? Shall I not wait? I don't know if he thought that as ICC chief, he's going to be, you know, embraced by the cricketers. But it became clear that they didn't even, you know, give two hoots for his existence. He got a sort of slunk off. Now, I have a point to make here, which again, I don't want it to sound like a colonial fantasy. Look, I don't wear suits and ties anymore. I just don't. I don't even wear blazers because I don't like the lapel, whatever it's called, cut. I just, you know, sort of wear work jackets and stuff. Don't wear a suit if you're going to look like a clown. Go in a gala bandiyar, just go in a Nehru jacket. Wear your Indian clothes, the way Pakistanis wear their, you know, salwar kurta. You just go. Yeah. So, but to wear that badly tailored, like, you know, white suit from your local, you know, New York tailors or even a Raymond and that, like, you know, bright blue tie with stripes, Tendulkar looked dapper. I mean, he wore that navy blue suit, really well tailored, fantastic. Yeah, yeah. This guy, I mean, you know, it's that same kind of Panju uncle wearing like a badly tailored suit at a wedding, getting drunk and then, you know, doing bhangra. I mean, why do it? Just
why give these people front stage? That sort of thing, you know, whether it's, you know, I think in India, this award should have been given by some kind of figurehead. It could be the president. It could be the sports minister, whoever was in power. If this was the other thing I noticed was in England, there's this fetish of kind of wrapping everything in minor royalty, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny. What I didn't want to mention is this Sunday in the newspaper. So today, Andrew, the guy who was giving Charles's brother, who's, I don't know, I lose count of how many people are in line to throne and what his line number is. But whatever, the basic truth is never going to make it. The question is, this Sunday, there's an article in the paper where he has been referenced as having slept with some underage women, right? But the lowness about English presentations, we've talked about the good neatness and the tidiness of how things get seamlessly, that everything has to have royal chukki, right? So we should, while we are creating Shashank Bhai, you know, because, you know, he's in Vada Pav vibe, we should also call out that Andrew has no fucking business to be there. Sorry, excuse my language.
Yeah, yeah, no. And by the way, underage women basically means children, right? So he's, if the allegation is true, he's pedophile.
Yes, correct. So what is he doing? The second or fourth in line to the throne. Why is he being? Because I don't think he's ever played cricket. I've never ever seen him. So if somebody like Mick Jagger was giving an award, I'd say, "Ah, the chalo banta hai," because the guy shows up occasionally for cricketing.
No, boss. Mick Jagger bought out. He used to be the owner of Cricinfo, boss, before ESPN got it.
Ah, okay. So I'm saying, yeah. Well, if somebody has to give out the award, right? What was the Shashank, who was ICC figurehead, and Andrew, who was representing British royalty, giving it out? They should have given somebody like Brian Lara or somebody like Sachin should have given out the trophy.
Yeah, yeah. Even Wimbledon, that Duke and Duchess of Kent, for years and years we would see them. And, you know, this is
idiots, man. You know, why they... Anyway, but for some markets, that's a great kind of...
See, Indians love it. I mean, I knew that, you know, there's a Parsi colony in Kolaba, Khusrobagh. I mean, every house, second house has, you know, poster of Diana there. And, you know, and somehow even if in India at large, like every time, you know, pardon my like politically incorrect way of putting it, but we rejoice at every royal wedding as if we are, you know, watching it from the servant quarter. So, you know, and this, I mean, who gives a damn about, you know, how many kids Kate Middleton has and what Kate Middleton's sister does and this Meghan and Kate have some tension and it's useless. But for some reason, Indians are very like thrilled about that. So, yeah, I think all that nonsense needs to move from the game, just as, you know, Bollywood's lowness in Indian cricket. And actually, to me, the other thing is that, you know, I think it's good that we've been taken down a notch because it's getting a bit too much. Yeah, this, you know, Virat Kohli in some, you know, designers, you know, kind of kurta and his wedding and his wife and, you know, their cutesy pictures. Arre, bahut ho gaya, yaar, you focus on cricket, you know. And I mean, you know, I'm sure that like if a high profile cricketer is dating a model or something, they, you know, the tabloids in Britain are going to also kind of go to town on it. But in India, it's just, you know, I mean, this whole thing about Dhoni promoting matrimonial sites, what endorsement each one has, Kohli will be coming in a film. I mean, it just slimes the game. Let the game stay the game, is what I would say.
Okay, look, we've come full circle. It was a great match. We enjoyed it. We enjoyed watching it. I hope people around the world who enjoy cricket and watch cricket enjoyed watching it. What a way to end the final. And we've got a new world cricket champion, England. And it's come to them on the third attempt. And also, heart goes out to New Zealand, Kiwi fans, who this is the second final they've run on the, lost on the trot. And trust me, they play the way they do and the kind of character they are, the characters of sport they are, it's only a matter of time. So I wish them the very best as a team going forward. That's all I've got to say on this one, Rohit.
I mean, I will just add one or two sentences, which is that to me, what's gratifying is I think England, not India, I think England have been the most well-rounded one-day side for the last few years. And I think, you know, for that reason and that reason, for a matter of fairness, I think it's only just they won. So it's a horrible, horribly cliched thing to end on. But, you know, as every commentator has said, cricket really was the winner. So,
on that note, let's wrap up.
Take care, boss. Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to us. Rohit and Bunty would like to sign off. Please stay tuned. Follow us on India Explained on Twitter. Keep listening. Thank you for all your support.